Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each Friday, we review the biggest stories of the week with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here is this week's episode.
We're expecting a ramping up of federal enforcement and potentially a good amount of collaboration at the state level in that larger mass deportation operation.
The voters have sent a crystal clear message that this ban that is currently in place in Arizona has no place in our state.
We anticipate that there will be those who oppose the will of the voters and still would like to restrict people's ability to access abortion care, but we're prepared to meet them, whoever they may be.
Obviously, it's going to be different. The majority controls the legislation that goes to the floor. But my experience over this 4 years is working together with Republicans.
This morning, I am joined by two longtime political strategists here in Arizona, Stacey Pearson with Lumen Strategies. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Chuck Coughlin, president and CEO of GOP consulting firm High Ground.
Happy to be here.
All right. So this morning we're going to do things a little differently on the Newscap because it's the beginning of a new year. We have a new administration coming in, a very different one, in fact. So we're going to talk about what might be to come on the political horizon in Arizona in 2025 and how some of these big national issues will likely hit home this year. I want to start with immigration. Obviously a big one on the national front, obviously a big one here in Arizona. We have a promise from the incoming Trump administration of mass deportations to come. We're not sure what this might look like at this point, but the idea of roundups, of deportations, of maybe workplace raids has a long and kind of storied history in Arizona, which I know you both have been witness to.
Right.
Stacey, let's start with you. What are you expecting to come on this front?
So I think we will see lots of publicity stunts and very little movement in actually removing folks from the country. I think that Homeland Security agents, even local law enforcement trying to comply with the proposition that passed in November, will be finding folks that are high profile, people that have committed other crimes, be it DUIs, burglaries, things that will be covered in a way that make it look more impactful than it really is.
So, Chuck, do you think this will look more like that, or do you think it'll look more like what we saw under former Sheriff Joe Arpaio?
Well, I think he'll start cleaning out the jails of anybody with a any type of non-immigration violation that is not here legally.
We have Jerry Sheridan coming in as Sheriff.
Right, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think he's going to do that as a first step. But I'm not so sure that it's going to be that's going to be the end of it. I think we will see some industry-based workplace raids based on belief of illegal employment. And I think he's going to have to do that to fulfill his promise to the constituencies which represented him and create some kind of momentum underneath some type of immigration reform. That's where I'm most intrigued by, is to see what he says in his State of the Union speech and what he commits to in terms of building hopefully something similar to the bipartisan package that he torpedoed, that he could say, now this is mine and this is the right thing to do. Because I think we all know if something like that happened, that'd be good for Arizona. That would be a good step forward. But we'll see. We'll all wait, hold our breath and see how disaster. But we've all lived through this, like you said before, Arpaio and that scenarios of the workplace roundups and the immigration sweeps and those types of things.
Right. So we have lived through this before in Arizona, and we've seen some significant backlash to that here in our state. Stacey, do you anticipate that if what Chuck says starts to happen, are you going to see people change their tune on immigration?
When we don't have a labor force, like what happened in 2000, what year was that? 10-ish, let's say, with 1070. When we don't have a workforce that will pick lettuce or pick watermelons and our produce starts to shoot through the roof, the business community, the folks worried about the economy are going to start squawking. And it's awful, but it really, people start to respond when it impacts them personally, when their landscaper left the state or their childcare provider took off. I mean, it really has to impact people personally. The unfortunate part is if history repeats itself, what we will see is a reduction in crime. And it has nothing to do with crime not being committed. It has everything to do with people being afraid to call 911. And so the actual call volume is going to go down, and the Republicans are going to take credit for it. But it doesn't mean our community is any safer.
There's a history of this, as we said, in Arizona. I wanted to ask you about 1070, Chuck, because you were kind of in the governor's office when this all happened, right? 15 years ago, almost.
Such a lovely memory. Thank you so much. Trip down memory lane here.
But at the time, like, it was a popular measure.
Hugely popular.
But then it wasn't, right? We saw this massive backlash. Yep. What would too far look like, Chuck?
Well, I think if we get into some of these workplace raids, that would affect some of the unions. I think Stacey's right on the employment side. That's going to start impacting, because we all know there's not enough people here to do all the jobs. Mm-hmm. And so if he goes after hotel workers, maids, those types of things that are traditionally represented by labor.
Caregivers.
Caregivers. If you get into that space, you will get an organized response to that. You will get an organized labor response to that. Because that's essentially what created the noise around 1070, was organized labor bringing in opposition and speaking to that, and displacement and civil rights and those types of things that came up. So I would, if he tips the scale that way and starts a sweep of industries and businesses, you will see that happen.
That's interesting, because you're both talking about it in terms of the economy, essentially.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about that in terms of Prop 314. We just saw a very similar measure passed very heartily by Arizona voters, but not much opposition at all from the Latino community, from the business community, sort of trepidation maybe, but not a lot of any kind of organized response. Where will that come from? Or does it not happen this time, Stacey?
So I think it will come from the ground up. To Chuck's point, the labor groups that are representing construction worker, tradesmen, building trades, those folks. And then it's going to really get personal for people, that their kid's best friend in fifth grade is not in class anymore. And the woman that's been helping take care of grandma is not here anymore. And I think those responses are going to be pretty intense. And when we're seeing folks that get deported and have to leave behind their American children, and we see DCS enrollment swell, children in custody of the state, it really is going to get ugly.
Yeah, the family separation thing is going to be huge. If that becomes an issue, I mean, we're all reading about that right now, right? We're reading about parents who are here without authorization
and have had
kids in the United States who are American citizens. And when that starts tripping that wire, you get back into that childhood separation issue, the family separation issue, that's going to be a problem. I mean, he's got to know that, though. He's got to understand that. And so how much saber rattling, I mean, that's the way I look at a lot of his stuff, is how much saber rattling is going to go on here, and noise making and posturing and message sending, and then what really happens. That's why I'm interested to see congressionally if he prioritizes, as they should. They should prioritize a border security measure and a modernization of the Customs and Border Patrol to give them more resources and be able to let people adjudicate or process them through a system. That doesn't happen right now. We don't have the courts. We don't have those institutions available, and he can make that happen.
Stacey, do you think there's any shot of comprehensive immigration reform of any kind, even a conservative version, happening in this Congress?
Oh, gosh, I would hope so. I mean, it is so long overdue.
And we're both highly cynical.
Yeah, we're starting out the new year so optimistic. But, I certainly hope so. And we've kicked the can on immigration in a way that has now cost the Democrats significantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have not given Dreamer Kids status.
Right.
And we wonder, everybody wrang their hands in, and clutched pearls in November. What happened with Latinos? Well, we've made broken promises to mixed status families now for decades. Mm. And so if the Republicans are smart, they will process comprehensive immigration reform and do what Reagan did and win over a generation of Latinos.
The other trigger here that could be going on is the SB4 litigation, which I'm not familiar with. I don't know where that's at.
Happening out of Texas, though, yeah.
Right, but that appeal process and that will go on. He'll use that. He'll use that as a backstop to talk about what is the problem and how we need to let states enforce it, because He's not. He's a federalist in a way. He wants, you know, abortion policy now done by the states. He will want this to have statewide federalist enforcement. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that, because he'll use that in the course of this narrative.
I want to move on to abortion, another big national issue we can expect to have a big impact here in Arizona and really across the country heading into this year. Arizona had a roller coaster of a year when it came to abortion. Let's not forget last year, 2024, now last year, from the state Supreme Court upholding the territorial area near total abortion ban to the state legislature actually doing something bipartisan and coming together to repeal it. Now, of course, we have a pretty overwhelming win for abortion rights advocates in the state with the passage of Prop 139. Stacey, let me start with you here. The passage of that proposition didn't really end the story, we should say, of what happens next with abortion law in Arizona. It goes to the courts, essentially.
Exactly. The mandate was given to the state legislature and to the courts now to clean up some of these outdated laws. Women in Arizona today are still required to have an unnecessary ultrasound, vaginal ultrasound, before they get a prescription medication. So that is beyond insanity. Oh, and a woman is also required to get the permission of her husband to end a pregnancy. And so some of these laws that remain on the books need to get cleaned up.
24-hour waiting period.
24-hour waiting
right.
period.
Right.
We're already seeing the governor act on some of these at the end of the year here, saying some of these requirements that providers report to the state have to be changed. Chuck, this was an issue that Democrats really banked on winning in 2024, maybe even for the presidency, and it didn't really pan out. I won't ask you why that is, because I think there's been a lot of talk about that. But I wonder, heading into 2025, do you think that abortion is kind of defanged as a political issue for the left?
I think most of the public is convinced that it is now a constitutional right for a female to have an abortion in Arizona. Mm. And I think that is what's in people's minds. All of these requirements, well-stated objections from the community on that are still there, and I get it. I just don't think it's headline material. It's not the kind of stuff that people, well, you're still getting your abortion, right? And, you know, it's like, well, shouldn't you think about, I mean, you can hear this conversation at the legislature. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see a lot of bipartisan appeal to go do much about that. I understand the politics of it. The governor is well positioned to make those points with the minority caucus. Mm-hmm. But I'm not seeing that there'll be a lot of sympathy on the other side to continue the ball rolling. You know, if they were in the legislature, you know, this would be another issue you'd put on the ballot, right? And maybe that, I don't know, maybe that's something that the legislature will consider doing, putting something on the ballot that addresses all of these preconditions.
Chuck, do you think there's any chance that at the federal level, we will see any action on this from the Trump administration, any kind of coalescing by Republicans who now have, you know, majorities everywhere to restrict abortion in any way?
There will certainly be efforts on the Republican side to limit that, to create some kind of national restriction. I don't think it will be reflective of a majority of the Republicans in both the House and the Senate, but you'll hear about it. And I'm sure the abortion rights proponents will make a lot of noise about that. I don't think Trump wants anything to do with it. I don't think a thoughtful senator wants anything to do with it. And I think that they'll follow the line. It's up to the states. Let the states decide this.
What does that mean, Chuck, for the future of the GOP, which has for so long been a pro-life party, right?
Like, I need a cocktail. because you could say that about both parties.
Yes.
I mean, you could
and
say
I'll
that.
And I'll ask Stacey next, yes.
Yeah, you could say that about both parties. I don't know what you know, you can see the format of the Republican Party here. It's now representing angry Americans, people who are alienated from the government, people who feel like the government's not working for them, people who, you know, you go through TSA and you get treated like a piece of baggage, you know, or, you know, you're asking your banker for some information and they give you an 800 number to call. You know, it's that kind of, I go back to this idea of the customer's always right. That's not true anymore. You go to the back of the line in big business today. And I think there's a Republican issue there that they will use in a deregulatory environment, talking about deregulation, talking about putting people back in charge. But I don't know. I really don't know, because the party is so fragmented on some of these right-wing issues that there's clearly not a plurality of Americans that agree with them on that. Maybe Republicans, or what is called Republican today. But it's not a broad cross-section of the country.
Yeah.
So somebody needs to come up with a narrative. I mean, both David Brooks said this in a column a while ago. He said both parties are acting like minority parties, like they're trying to unseat the other party. And somebody has to start to act like a majority party and give the country a governing narrative. Because we don't have that right now.
That's a really interesting way to put it. So, okay, so yes, so the abortion question and the future of the Democrats to you, Stacey, and then I want to talk more broadly about that idea. Go ahead.
I think we are going to see Democrats hold up the filibuster and celebrate the filibuster, which is
crazy,
incredibly ironic, right? And former Senator Sinema has had a few choice tweets about this. But I think the filibuster will prevent any national legislation from being enacted. And would you look at that?
The Sinema, we should say, made a big point about keeping the filibuster.
Nostradamus, yes. As it were.
Yeah, weird how that works. It's almost like she was really smart and knew things. Look at that.
So this brings me to some broader questions I wanted to ask about the future, in particular of the Democratic Party heading into 2025 after these big losses in 2024. Let's talk about that narrative question that you brought up, Chuck. Like this idea that the Democratic Party in particular, maybe both parties, right, need to come up with a narrative for the country, with this very divided and fractured country going forward. Start there, Stacey. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with Chuck that is very much the issue. And when you look at the autopsy of the November 24 election in Maricopa County alone, Maricopa County lost 72,000 Democrats, just a net loss in registration. Harris lost Maricopa County by 71,000 votes. 72 came off the books. She lost by 71.
Wow.
We have to figure out what that is. And in precincts that where Trump flipped, and in this area that everyone talks about, the Latino turnout for Trump, and it's the machismo, I think we're getting too far into the weeds on identity politics. The two sections of the city that Trump gained the most ground have the crappiest traffic. It's the folks who were just fighting in rush hour. Well, maybe not now because we're close to holidays, but it was the northeast section of the 101. Hmm. So essentially the 101 from Shea-ish up to the 51, and then I-10 West, which is a certifiable parking lot.
Traffic jam.
Yeah. So
both ways.
Those are the precincts that government in its most basic form, to Chuck's point a second ago,
service
isn't
people.
Working.
Right.
It's not working for them. They're trying to get their mom's Social Security benefits sorted out. They're on hold for 6 hours before it turns 5 o'clock on the East Coast. They get hung up on.
Yep.
Yes, that literally happened to me. You know, it's the freeways aren't working. The schools are bad. They can't get their kids caught up. They're spending too much on after school care. It's just this collapse of anything that they need.
Yeah, there's no general identity there of a constituency that they're talking to. Stacey mentioned the identity stuff, which has sort of captured the narrative of that party for too long, and it needs to be redefined. It used to be the working class, you know, the working class guy. Guess what? Trump now owns that.
Yep.
And so, you know, okay, who are we? What are we doing? Because you're losing the registration battle. There's no horizon that I see that in my lifetime in the next 10 years that says, oh, Democrats are going to start registering more and more voters. They're in this perpetual minority party status. Republicans can still do it because they're breeding that anger and that discontent and that alienation that people feel from government. They're embodying that right now. And so what do you do? So I'm going to pay you both for therapy here. It'll be my therapy session. So my idea there was Prop 140 was open up the party to allow it to include larger constituencies.
Right.
Begin the Democratic Party, in my mind, should begin to narrate to that constituency and invite them into their narrative, which starts with equality.
Equality. Stacey, what do you think for the Democrats going forward? What would you do if you were the one deciding what narrative they should pick?
Oh, we just need to get away from this cast of consultants who studied poverty. It's my favorite insult to people. I literally love it. It's the meanest thing I say to someone who's lecturing me about things we should be doing. I ask them, did you study poverty? Because if you were poor, you know what an obnoxious question that is. And the number of people who say, well, yes, when I got my master's at Georgetown, I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And so it's to just get out of this. We need to get off this high horse where we've got the answers to people's problems we don't even understand. So I think just getting back to basics and talking about the kitchen table issues for people and get rid of some of the consultants that studied poverty.
I agree. I mean, look at what Arizona has done well historically. Mm. We've invested in infrastructure well, including educational infrastructure. Yeah. We have some of the most robust community college systems here in the state, which are an amazing opportunity for workforce training, to give people an opportunity to improve their lives. That's a great opportunity to talk about that and talk about how we're creating greater opportunities. I mean, look at all the job opportunities that are being created right now in Arizona as a result of where we are and who we are. Our economy is always going to be growing. It's like the one thing most Arizona governors are blessed with the exception of a few, are like, holy Christ, I got the whole economic boom going on behind me. Yeah. I should be able to manage this and do well with this. So think about what we do well. Think about what we've historically done well. The governor's doing some of that right now, talking about water policy and trying to create more of an opportunity for, again, treat everybody equally. Mm-hmm. And there's some infrastructure issues there that government's generally good with, that people look to government to provide those kind of answers.
Okay. Final question for you both and a little bit of a game, right? Two questions here. If you could sum up 2024 in one word, right, in Arizona politics, what would it be?
In one word.
Chaos.
Not a bad one.
I would go chaos.
Okay.
Back to your abortion thing earlier, that was chaotic the whole time. Back to Trump's run, the Biden-Harris evolution. It was literally chaos. It was just crazy.
Stacey?
See, one word is so hard. Because I want to say dumpster fire, but that's a lot like chaos.
I'll take it. It's a little too chaos.
No, I think it was defining. How about that? Sure. I mean, we have learned a lot, hopefully a lot of really, we as Democrats, really important lessons about the way we're talking to people or down to people or at people, the way we've defined people. We missed the mark on a lot of really, really important approaches.
Yeah. Okay. So one word for what you're predicting, maybe hoping, maybe for 2025.
Oh, wow. So we have to put on our optimistic hat here.
You don't have to. It could be a bad one.
But come on. We got the whole year ahead of us.
It's a new year.
I don't want to start in where I am right now. For God's sake, I don't want to start where I am right now. So I'm gonna say hopeful. I'm going to say hopeful that Trump can get some things done, that this Doge thing can actually maybe be somewhat effective. I'm going to hope for some immigration type stuff. I'm going to hope that the Middle East gets less conflicted as a result of this. I'm going to hope that we find a solution in Ukraine that is acceptable to the Ukrainian people, that we reduce conflict around the world. That would all be good things.
Stacey?
I would say connected. I think we are evolving away from just folks sitting in front of their cable news televisions and watching what the pundits are giving them.
Streaming,
mm-hmm. right? I people are more connected. They're seeing different content. I think we're getting folks a little bit out of the bubble. That's what I'm most hopeful for.
Man, but what is that new bubble? That's pretty crazy.
That's right. I guess it's the devil we know.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely more democratized media sources.
All right. Well, I appreciate your efforts there on those one words. Those are not easy. All right. Stacey Pearson with Lubin Strategies. Chuck Coughlin, president and CEO of GOP consulting firm High Ground. Thank you both so much.
Thank you,
Lauren.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the biggest stories of the week with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Lauren Gilger. Thanks for listening.